You're listening to The Back 40, the podcast for Ontario farmers, covering topics and issues that matter most to Ontario agriculture. Brought to you by Trillium Mutual Insurance, bringing the ag community together one podcast at a time. I'm the host of The Back 40, Mike Brine, agribusiness specialist at Trillium Mutual Insurance. Talked a lot about advocacy and various professionals in the farming industry. We're talking today with Amanda Broadhagen. Amanda grew up on a beef farm near Brunner, Ontario. She was heavily involved in various ag-related youth groups such as 4-H, Junior Farmers, Perth County Plowman's Association, for which she was also twice their Queen of the Furrow. In 2018, she was named as Ag More Than Ever's ambassador. Currently, she works for a company called Pathways Group as the head of their agriculture and agri-food group and is a counselor as well for the township of Perth East. Amanda, welcome to the Back 40.
Well, thank you for having me, Mike.
So fill us in a little bit of the blanks here. What is the Pathways Group?
So as you sort of mentioned in my bio, I wear a few different hats. I work alongside my family on our multi-generational family farm in Perth County. So I'm a proud Perth County girl. I'm also a rural counselor for the township of Perth East. And I've also recently been a part of a group called Pathway Group, and we are a full-service government relations firm. A lot of people are like, well, what is government relations and how did you get involved with that? My background is actually my degree from the University of Guelph is in political science. I have been involved in politics since university and have had the opportunity to work at all three levels of government, obviously as a counselor municipally, and was a senior policy advisor to the Minister of Agriculture here in Ontario, the Doug Ford government, and also during the Harper era, I was a policy intern and working in Ottawa. So essentially what we do is we work with clients to help them talk to government and help them communicate their issues that they're facing and be partners. And so some people would call us lobbyists. That is the correct term, but we like to call ourselves advocates for our clients. And so we work alongside them. They're the experts in their field and the issues that they face, but we work with them to open those doors to talk with political officials and public servants and just help them navigate that. I think it can be really intimidating. People don't know where to start. And the exciting thing is that my firm that I'm part of, we have people on our team that have all different political pedigrees, if you will. And we have people that have, you know, in tremendous experience, both provincially, federally, and municipally. And we're generalists. It doesn't matter what issues that we tackle them all. But there's also an exception. There are some folks like myself that are subject matter experts. And so I think the firm saw an opportunity to bring an agriculture and agri-food practice to the firm and to offer that service to folks that need it. And so they brought me on. They know that I'm passionate about the sector. And so that's been my role. It's been really exciting. Obviously, there's been talk about a federal election. There's never a dull moment. There's lots of excitement. So I'm really fortunate to be part of that team and to work with, you know, whether it's ag companies or associations and farm groups to help them navigate their need when they're talking to government.
I know that one of the biggest complaints that you hear is that nobody in government ever listens. And if you stop and think about it, as a part of agriculture and as farmers, we make up 1%-ish of the population, yet it's a huge industry. And there is that tendency for us to be unheard. And I find it interesting that a group such as Pathways looks at this and sees agriculture as a huge opportunity, as they did by bringing yourself on board there.
There's people in the ag sector that have representation and work with firms like ours, but there's also lots that don't, right? And it's something sort of new or foreign to them, but realizing gone are the days of slamming your fist on the table to make demands. You know, the political landscape looks a lot differently than it did 50 years ago, right? I think there's that recognition that we need to work with professionals that know how to navigate government, know how to package issues so that you get heard. And so we do government relations. That's sort of 90% of our job, our business, but we also do public affairs as well. So that's another sort of aspect. And it's, you know, as much as the pandemic has been really awful in many ways, it has been very good for business because there's definitely been more of a need to talk to government about issues that various sectors are facing, including agriculture.
Yeah, the idea of slamming your fist on the table and raising your voice has never been very effective, although a lot of people use that technique. You tend not to get heard. A lot of that work gets done behind the scenes, and that's where you and Pathways Group come into play there. What's the most interesting topic or issue that you're running across currently that is taking up your time?
Oh, that's a great question. I would say there's a lot of issues facing the sector right now, but I think the industry, we're so forward-looking, we're so innovative and sophisticated that we're trying to look at the big picture of what do we need as an industry. And I think what we recognize in the pandemic, and I'll speak from a beef farmer perspective here, is some of the challenges that we've faced in, you know, our processing capacity when it comes to processing meat, but not only processing meat, but all food processing. And so I think some of these issues were certainly present before the pandemic, but just the nature of the pandemic, it has exacerbated those things further. And as much as there's been some really significant challenges, this is a huge opportunity for the industry to advocate that, you know, we need more processing capacity. We need more dollars put towards innovation and research. So looking at it from long term, there's certainly the immediate needs that the industry is facing. I mean, we look at, for example, the beef industry with the drought in Northern Ontario, which is very serious. There's some immediate needs that need to be addressed there, but there's also the long term needs. So I think when we work with our clients, we look at, okay, here's the issues. This is the landscape. What are your needs right now? What are your needs for the future? And sometimes you don't get everything that you ask for, but if you have a few really clear, defined asks, you're more likely to get what you're advocating for. And I think the key thing that is so important is when you talk to government, you know, not just saying, here's my problem, come with some solutions. I think that's the exciting thing. The fact of the matter is our resources are finite when it comes to the industry, but also looking at it from our politicians and the political staffers, right? I think it's really overwhelming. There's so many competing interests and interest groups. And so if you have a stakeholder coming to the table and say, you know what, this is my issue, but we have a solution and we want to work with you to get this resolved. And so I think those are the conversations and the approaches that tend to be very successful when communicating to all levels of government.
A few years ago, I worked for the provincial government, and we were involved in the CASE program and the Ag Stability program. And a lot of what we found was that groups that came to the table with one voice and a solution for their problems got heard, and too many groups came to the table with multiple voices with differing opinions. And the tendency there is to just say, you know what, when you guys have got an answer, go away until then. And when you've got a single answer that you want, come back to us and talk to us. That single voice is extremely important. I found it interesting you talked about the processing capacity that we have. And my own opinion is that we walk far too many animals across the border. There's too many live animals leave this country without being processed. And if you go back to 2003 with the BSE crisis, which coincidentally is when I started working for AgriCorps, we found out then we had huge problems with processing capacity. And I'm not sure we've really learned anything in the 18 or 19 years since that we still lack that processing capacity. Are we making any headway in getting people to understand we do need to process more of our product?
I think so. I mean, again, talking from sort of the, you know, the meat industry, you know, Meat and Poultry Ontario, they have done some tremendous work in terms of representing the small and medium-sized abattoirs in the province. And I think the reality is that the most healthy system is when you have a little bit of a mix of both, or, you know, you have some of the larger processors and medium and small-sized processors. And so I know that there's been lots of great conversations that have been had at communicating to government about this need. And I think because of the pandemic, we recognize that this is much bigger than just these industry issues. It's a food security issue. And I think we look at Kraft, for example, with some of their plants in Quebec, I mean, producing lots of peanut butter and Kraft dinner, right? This huge demand for it. And so, yes, I think there's been a recognition by government and in industry as well that we need to build up our infrastructure when it comes to food processing. But it's not that simple. There are so many barriers, including labor. We have chronic labor shortages, you know, in rural Ontario in general, not just in the ag sector. And of course, investment, right? You know, industry and government coming together to make these things work. So I think these are part of the long-term discussions that we need to have as an industry and partnering with government to make it happen. Absolutely. Again, as much as this has been such a challenging thing for the sector, there's huge opportunity. And because there's more of an appetite and awareness that, you know, when things were sort of happening at the grocery store with people hoarding food and certain types of food, we've seen that. And also recognizing too that the restaurant industry has been greatly impacted. It's not as quick to redirect, you know, those foods, whether it's French fries, example, or cream, or even mushrooms. The mushroom industry, you know, has faced some serious hardships. And so I remember, like, I would literally go out of my way to look for Canadian mushrooms at the grocery store because I knew that with the restaurant scene being the way it was, I wanted to support our mushroom growers in the province. And plus, mushrooms and beef go really well together.
That's true. Never quite thought of it that way, but it's kind of a topic near and dear to my heart too. I think mushrooms add a lot to a good steak. But we found out a lot when the pandemic first hit. We found out a lot when the restaurant shut down about how difficult it is to move a processing industry to making something that's useful to be put in the stores. And that's what you're talking about there. I mean, there's something wrong when you look at not having enough meat or not having enough product in the stores, and the farmers can't get their animals killed because there's too much of a backlog at the processing, whether that's because it was shut down because of COVID or because some of the processing plants cater specifically to that restaurant industry and they can't sell to our retail market.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've seen this happen, you know, even looking at greenhouse grown tomatoes and some of the things that have been on the news and saying, hey, we can't redirect this. So if people aren't going to come and buy it, we're going to have to throw it out. And so that brings this whole other question about food waste and some of people in our society that, you know, don't have access to nutritious food and affordability issues because of their, you know, economic situation. And so I think that's been really challenging. I think we've seen some, again, agriculture being the optimist that we are, have seized that opportunity, seen the need, and we've seen farm groups and individual farmers come forward and donate food to our food banks. And I know that the Perth County Beef Producers, we have donated some ground beef to some groups in need and plan to do some more in the future. And so we see that, you know, the dairy farmers and the egg farmers. So I think that's really good. We obviously don't want to see nutritious food thrown out. And so when we share that with the consumer, I think people really want to try to help. It's just about getting the word out there.
I think that's a good point. I think that people need to know that, first off, get those people that have the product to be able to get that to the people that have the need is always going to be a challenge. Now, with the Pathways Group and also throughout your career, you've been involved in advocacy and telling the story for agriculture there. I want to focus a little bit on the beef industry here. Do you find that you run into challenges with people not understanding what goes on in our beef industry? I know that that's something that we've heard from other people in other industries, that it's really hard to get the consumers to understand exactly what is going on before it gets to their plate.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the reality is agriculture is so specialized and so high tech that it's no wonder that consumers don't understand the full picture, and nor do they really need to. I think, you know, yes, there's certainly a lot of challenges that our industry has faced, and a lot of farmers often feel under attack with some of the populist ideas out there about eating less meat to save the environment, or that eating less meat is better for your health. And certainly one of the unique opportunities that I've had is because I went to the University of Guelph, but I wasn't an Aggie. I was adopted or wannabe Aggie.
We still like you.
And so I think with that, I've developed a network of people, and because of, you know, being involved in politics, that people that didn't grow up on the farm, people that are from Toronto, and that is like one of our biggest markets at our doorstep here in Ontario, which is a huge opportunity. And I remember having a conversation, it was over Facebook Messenger, and one of my good friends had said, you know, Amanda, I've decided to be vegan for a year. And I was like, okay, well, you know, that's your choice. And if you ever have questions or are curious about anything, like, feel free to ask. And so I was really pleasantly surprised that he had shared that with me. And, you know, he would ask lots of great questions. And I remember, like, about a year later, he said, you know, I've started eating these again. And it's because I see all the posts that you share on social media, and it makes me feel good that, you know, there's producers like you out there. And so started adding meat in his diet again. And so that was really impactful for me, because I share a lot on social media and I never really know who's seeing it, how much impact it's having on people. But I think it is, because I've had numerous people have questions and they reach out, they're like, oh, I know a girl, she might know the answer. And if I don't know the answer, I probably know another farmer that said that they can connect with, that they can ask those questions. Because the reality is, I'm not an expert in all of agriculture, right? I'm involved in the industry. I'm involved in the beef industry in particular. I know a little bit about, you know, a bunch of different sectors, but people are asking really technical questions. I think it really is beneficial for them to talk to the farmer that's producing it. And I think that's the powerful thing, is that people trust farmers, right? And, you know, as much as we sometimes feel under threat, we have to see it as an opportunity to bridge that gap and have those conversations. And I think consumer choice is a good thing, right? As much as we as an industry get so frustrated and so bogged down because we feel constantly attacked, and we get so, it breaks our hearts when we see misinformation about our industry, but we just need to see it as an opportunity to have those conversations and to really just be raw and real with people. And I think people really respond to that. I think the big thing that we also need to recognize too, that plant-based proteins, they're not necessarily a bad thing, right? I mean, the reality is, we're the world's largest producer of pulses in the world. Most of it's exported. The Ontario Bean Growers Association, you know, does tremendous work. A lot of our beans go to the United Kingdom, right, for baked beans. And so I think let's stop making wedge politics and getting divisive. I think we need to celebrate all of our industry.
Do you like what you're hearing from the Back 40? We'd like to hear from you. Send us an email with your comments and thoughts to theback40@trilliummutual.com, or follow us on social media at Trillium Mutual.
I think the big thing that I would love to see, and I think many other farmers would agree, is when you call plant-based products meat. I think that is really dangerous, and it really creates a lot of confusion. And we've seen a lot of that debate happen in Europe. And I would love to see more of that happen here in North America, that debate, looking at food labeling. I think that is something that I would love to see happen in the future. And I know many other farmers are sort of in my corner on that one. But also, just going back to advocacy, I am a graduate of the Academy of Leaders program. It's a mentorship program in the beef industry, one of the few from Ontario. And one of the great things with that program is I've had so many opportunities to get exposed to groups and associations that I would never have the opportunity to. So McDonald's had asked me to be part of a food blogger event in Toronto, and they were launching their Mighty Angus Burger. And I thought, oh, this is really exciting. And I remember going there, we had all of the people that are part of the supply chain to bring this burger to life, that the person who developed and, you know, the innovator of the burger, to the people that are processing, the Cargills of the world. And then there's myself. And I remember, you know, we're all sitting around and we're eating and we're enjoying this burger and it's so good. And, you know, the McDonald's folks are saying, okay, well, here's a Q&A. And so the food bloggers, they raise their hands and all of the questions are directed at me. And they weren't easy questions. They're asking questions about animal welfare and confinement and things like that. And, you know, I was like thinking to myself, because I had to be really quick on my feet because I wasn't actually prepared for those types of questions. But because of my advocacy work, we're taught that, you know, we always have to be prepared to talk about all different aspects of the industry and be able to speak confidently on those topics. And I had my phone in my back pocket and I said, look, I said, these are really great questions that you're asking and they're important. And I can tell you all the great things that we do on our farm and the industry does. But I said, it's so much easier if I can show you. And so I pulled out my phone and I passed it around and showed, like, here's some pictures of my farm. This is what it looks like. You know, it really put people at ease and they were surprised, pleasantly surprised. And I said, look, you're welcome to follow me on social media. You know, if you ever have any questions, I'm here to answer them if I can, right? And so I know I have at least one influential food blogger that we still follow each other on social media. So I think that's been really impactful. And these are the influencers that are reaching an audience that I can't reach, right? And so I think that was really exciting and a really fantastic opportunity that I had to sort of share my farm. You know, it's all about how you make people feel, right? It's not always about what you say. And we as an industry, because we're so technical, we tend to fall back on the statistics and the facts.
Facts and figures.
Those are great and they're interesting. And if you're talking to maybe the right person, they might, you know, take that in, but the average person probably isn't, right? And so I think our opposition as a sector does a really good job at evoking emotion. And so I think that's why it's so imperative that we as farmers are sharing our story and really, before we're sharing it, taking a hard look at, okay, what would this look like to people not in the sector, right? You know, as an example, like, you know, if I'm vaccinating cattle and I have an animal in a head gate, it is for their safety, it's for my safety, it's a good practice. But if somebody saw a picture of it, they might think, oh my gosh, that animal's hurting. That animal looks like it's in trouble. And so I think we have to look at it from all angles. And I think that can be a challenge because we want to focus on raising and producing food, right? We aren't government relations professionals. We're not communications professionals, although there's a lot of us, including myself, that work off the farm that are involved in those industries. But I think it can be, you know, it's certainly a challenge for the sector going forward. And, but again, when we have these challenges, there's always opportunity. And I think when we are challenged, we end up doing our best.
Yeah, the idea that I think a lot of us get caught up in is that people are interested in the facts and figures, and I don't have the facts and figures. And yet, if we talk to people, we have a tendency to fall back on that because it's something that we're very familiar with because we're professionals in this. We understand this industry, but you really do have to simplify it. And you're right. The example of the head gate's a really good example. A picture of an animal in a head gate by itself looks or can look really bad if you don't have the context around it, which is we need to do some work with this animal. We need to, whatever it is needs to be done. And you can't do that chasing them around the middle of a pasture. At a certain point, you've got to get them to a point where you can work with them on that. Is that part of the problem that we have? Do we as advocates, we either don't want to tell our story as farmers, or we tell it in such a technical manner that nobody can understand what we're saying?
All the farmers that I've met, they are so happy to answer any questions that people have. So I don't think that that's a problem. I think it's being able to reach those people. I think that's a challenge because we have this like echo chamber, and Twitter is a great example. I love Twitter and I think it's a great tool, but I call it like the virtual coffee shop for farmers because we all get on there and you're following people that have the same interests as you. And so, you know, you try to get your message out and it doesn't always reach the people that you want to. So there's that. And then I think also, again, we have a sophisticated industry, right? And it's a recognition that even though we're all farmers, if we can't speak in great detail about every issue facing the sector. And so I think it's really complex. And if you don't have media training, you don't have that awareness, it's really hard because you have a certain worldview perspective. Your worldview perspective is life on the farm, right? That's what you know. That's what you're good at. And so I think, you know, that can be a challenge. But I also, with that being said, I know lots of incredible farmers that are tremendous advocates for our industry. They speak with confidence. They speak so well. And I think more of that is great. And also recognizing too that not everybody needs to be out there either. If you know that communication and that that's something you don't want to do, or you're scared and whatnot, support the advocate that is out there doing those things. So I think there's lots of different ways to sort of approach it. And we also have to recognize everyone's comfort level, but it never hurts to have media training. You know, I think we've seen a lot of our farm groups that are doing that, and Farm and Food Care Ontario offers that service to farmers and different ag groups. So I think, you know, those are really, really good things. And I think the way that our world is today, I think that is something that we need, you know, our spokesperson farmers that are out there. We need to give them the tools that they need to feel comfortable and to be successful.
Yes, you mentioned there about support those people. If you can't do it yourself, make sure you support the people that are advocating on behalf of the industry. And one of our first podcast with Andrew Campbell on, and his comment was, if you can't do anything else, then write a check to somebody that is doing advocacy work. And I think that's something that many people who are not comfortable telling their story, certainly not through social media, but not as comfortable, that's something that they should remember, that they're a lot of this advocacy work does cost a little bit of money to do, and it's not a bad idea to get out there and support some of the people that are doing that. Now, you mentioned that you went through the beef mentorship program. Now, that set you up for an idea that you had, one of your passions, which was supporting women in agriculture, and you were involved in starting a mentorship program. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I was fortunate in 2014 to be selected in Ontario as part of the Cattlemen Leaders Program. It's a mentorship program that the Canadian Cattlemen's Association created after realizing that there's a lot of white hairs out there, you know, when you're at a conference.
Careful, careful.
And I think, you know, there were some really progressive people, including Jill Harvey at the time, that if we want our industry to remain viable, we're going to have to bring new people in or retain who we have. And so this idea to create a mentorship program for the sector, and it's really, it's celebrated its, I believe, 10-year anniversary last year, and it's evolved over the years. It equips, there's sort of two components to it. There's the setting yourself up with a mentor, but then there's also the advocacy and training. So we get training on governance, we get training on negotiation training, we get exposure to trips across Canada to see how beef production is, you know, taking place across the country or internationally. There's international trips, and I had the opportunity to go to Denver, Colorado as part of the Cattle Young Leaders Program, and spend some time in Western Canada as well, and as well as host people in Ontario, and how folks were really interested in the way we keep cattle and raise cattle for the most part in Ontario with barns. And obviously the scale is different in Ontario compared to Western Canada. So I had the opportunity to be selected as an Ontario rep as part of the Cattlemen Leaders Program. There isn't quotas as part of the program. You compete whether no matter where you are in the country, but there's only a handful of us from Ontario that have, you know, been selected. And they're looking for people who are leaders in the industry already and helping them cultivate their leadership skills. And so there's sort of two components of the mentorship program. There's the advocacy training and the, you know, training on governance and training on negotiation. But then there's also the component of pairing yourself up with a mentor to help you navigate and meet, you know, the goals that you're sort of looking for. So one of my focus areas was advocacy and lobbying and influence. And I had the opportunity to be paired up with Dr. Lauren Hepworth. He's an MLA, a former MLA. So an MLA is like a version of a MPP, a member of provincial parliament here in Ontario. And he was a minister in Saskatchewan and a veterinarian by trade, and was head of CropLife Canada for many years. And I had this incredible opportunity and experience through working with Lorne, but also, you know, networking with like-minded people across the country I certainly would have got to where I wanted to be, but I was able to get there a lot quicker because I had the mentorship, because I had the exposure and the networking. What a wonderful opportunity. And I remember as a sector, we were having this discussion about women in agriculture and barriers that women face. And I was part of a focus group that the Canadian Agriculture Human Resource Council put together. We're having this discussion about what are the barriers for women to be part of boards and associations? What are the barriers to women to, you know, have hold higher positions in ag companies or associations? What are the barriers to women on the farm when we talk about childcare, things like that? And I remember talking about mentorship, and I randomly applied to a opportunity. It was a Fido Flair competition, and Fido is the phone company and Flair is the women's magazine. And it said, you know, we're looking for millennial women and we want, tell us what your passion project is, and you can win $1,000 and you get a photo shoot and go to Toronto and, you know, this experience. And I remember it was a promoted like advertisement that I got through LinkedIn. I thought, oh, this is really interesting. I'm like, I should wing it. I was like, and so I made this pitch without having any discussion with anyone about saying my passion is to create a mentorship program for women in agriculture. And to my surprise, I got an interview and they said, you know, your application stood out to us because you're the only woman from rural Canada and you're from a farm. That's so cool. They were so excited. And so I had a really great conversation with them and I ended up getting selected along with other really accomplished women like authors and engineers, like really impressive women from across Canada. And I got $1,000 and I remember calling up Jen Christie, who was the founder of the Ag Women's Network. And I said, I have something to tell you. I said, I hope you're not mad, but I made this pitch. You know, I think the place for it really is with the Ag Women's Network. I said, what do you think? And she thought it was a great idea. And so I ended up working with another fellow beef farmer and retired teacher, Joan Craig. And we took a look at the Cattle Leaders Mentorship Program, used that as sort of a template, not to reinvent the wheel, and did a pilot with Ag Women's Network. And the feedback was just incredible. And people were so excited with it being a pilot. And we had to focus just on Ontario mentees. And we paired it up and it was really successful. And I think people recognize that there's a need for that. And we had a lot of discussions in that year with other groups saying, hey, here you have this mentorship program. Like, we want to hear about it because we want to do something like that too. And so I give the credit to the Cattle Leaders Program and also the wonderful people at the Ag Women's Network that supported it, and Joan Craig in particular. So I was there for the pilot phase. And then I ended up getting a post at Queen's Park. I was called to have an opportunity to serve the Minister of Agriculture. So I had to totally step back. The mentorship is thriving today. So it continues on. And the remarkable thing of it, and if for anyone that's listening, it is like volunteer driven. And so it'd be great to have more industry support for that program because we have volunteers being part of it and it costs money, right? And I think that the Cattle Leaders Program, we have sponsors like McDonald's Canada and other big names. And that is fantastic that the industry recognizes we need to support these things. They're so imperative for the future of our industry and to support women in agriculture.
We've been talking with Amanda Broadhagen about various industry issues in either the beef industry or advocacy. Amanda, if people want to find out what you're up to, how do they follow you on social media and how do they get a hold of you?
They can follow me on Twitter at Amanda Broadhagen. It's spelled like the place Broadhagen, Broadhagen.
Thank you very much for spending some time with us today. It's been a great conversation.
Thanks for having me, Mike.
You've been listening to The Back 40. Join us next time when our guest will be Sugata Pahari, and we'll be talking about autonomous robots and when they may be coming to your farm. That's next time on The Back 40. You've been listening to The Back 40. brought to you by Trillium Mutual Insurance.
Join us next time. We'll be talking with Amanda Broadhagen about various issues surrounding the beef industry in Canada.
Be sure to subscribe to The Back 40 wherever you find your favorite podcasts so that you don't miss an episode. The Back 40, bringing the ag community together one podcast at a time. I'm Mike Brine. Until next time, take care and stay safe.